Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. You've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Bridge.
Hello and welcome to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight is our monthly recap episode. And as always, here is our host, Robert Howe.
How's New York? I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. As our executive producer, Jason Versace, told you, this is our monthly recap, and Jason has spent most of the month scouring the periodicals and internet and any sort of article that may say how wonderful Brooklyn real estate is going and how wonderful it is to live in the great area of Brooklyn, New York. Tonight is no different. And he has managed to assemble several different articles, a little on the whimsical side maybe. Jason, why don't you start us off with a couple topics that you found?
Well, first of all, very prophetic. You've called it once again. We talk about a lot of different stories on a lot of different recap shows, and we keep waiting. We're not waiting, but kind of wondering, when are we going to have a story? Is this the month where we're going to get a story where they say, oh, everyone abandoned ship, the numbers are turning? But yet again, we have stories to the contrary. But first we'll start off from a story in Brownstoner. And again, a lot of different media outlets. It seems like it used to be just real estate periodicals or real estate media would talk about this. Glynn Real Estate has kind of been one of those topics that transcends, just the industry and is really newsworthy to many different types of outlets. It's a Brooklyn and Brooklyn real estate is just a hot topic. And This one comes from Brownstoner. It's more of like a, I think it's an optimistic kind of quick little case study on how they call it, how these three 20-somethings bought a home in Brooklyn. I guess if you're looking for kind of a starter piece on how you two can buy your first home in Brooklyn, and nothing terribly, I think, scientific about any of the information here, but there was one thing that stood out to me, and I'll get your take on it before I tell you what it is.
Are you wanting me to guess what the one thing that stood out?
Oh, well, I want to get your take and see if you picked. One thing stood out to me that was interesting, the most interesting fact about this article piece, but I'm curious to see what you thought.
Okay,
about
well, it's three nice stories, actually, how people became homeowners in Brooklyn, New York, and the first fellow, Greg, bought a place out in Kensington. He bought a co-op for $180,000. And what was cute about this story, I remember he says, I had an account called My First Home Fund. And it sort of brought back the memory of my brother, who I shared a room with, you know, growing up. When he bought his first car, he established my first, sort of like my first car fund. And he had a thermometer style scale on the wall of how much money he saved. And ultimately, when he got to the top of the thermometer, you know, he was able to put a down payment on a car. So this is sort of very similar where, yes, you know, the issue in Brooklyn is that things generally cost $1 million. And I don't know of too many people who have 20%, $200,000, to put that down to own a property. And honestly, you could probably go 50 miles out from Brooklyn and still need a sizable chunk of money. But the interesting take from these articles is that these people scrimped and saved, and they were diligent in getting a deposit together, and then maybe they asked a family member to help them, and they found a relatively inexpensive place. And the inexpensive places now in Brooklyn are small studios and maybe one-bedroom co-ops in the high hundreds, low 200,000s, and that's still somewhat achievable for a lot of people. And, you know, it's just a very nice story of people being determined to buy something, saving it, scrimping and saving, and saying things like, maybe I shouldn't buy that $6 Starbucks coffee. Let me get the dollar coffee from the bodega on the corner and put the other $5 in, you know, into the savings account. And you do have to be, a little diligent about looking. You're not going to find the ideal place with the ideal price on day one. One of these articles said it took about 2 years to find a place, and I think this particular person split the home with her mother. Mother helped her with the mortgage, the monthly payment, and that allowed her to to get something. And then another place. Let's see, where were they? One was in Borum Hill. Well, that's kind of an expensive area. It's still expensive, but maybe if you get a studio apartment or one bedroom, you could do it for around $200. And then I think the last one was in Bushwick, which is a very hot neighborhood, but there are still places to be found out there. For this one person got something for $190,000. But the thing that struck me, so you asked me what struck me maybe in the three stories, how these people sort of set up a little bit of a savings account, like in the old days we'd have a thing called a Christmas club or Christmas account where you put in $10 or $20 a week, and at the end, by Christmas, you'd have a couple $1,000s or a couple $100s and be able to buy presents. So that's what stuck out to me. I don't know what's stuck out to you. I'm interested in hearing that.
Well, first, yeah, everyone seemed to have a pretty straightforward, old-fashioned approach. You got to be disciplined. You got to put money. One of the mentions that they cut back on a lot of different things and need to make some sacrifices and not take a trip or not, you know, do too much social activity or for spending here and there. But the one thing that struck me was there was a little bit of lack of context in some of these. Like, they tell you the neighborhood. They don't tell you when the home was purchased, and they give you some pretty low prices, I think, given by, you know, 2017's market. So I'm wondering, you know, when they made these purchases, how long ago it was, or maybe a little bit more about the home that they purchased, because they don't give any real details. One of them says it's a studio, one's a one-bedroom. You know, you don't know. You kind of get the idea that it's a, you know, a story to kind of say, hey, we can do it, you can do it, but they don't really tell you what you're getting for that $180,000 or the $190,000. So it's a little bit. I was reading it, thinking, well, where is this information? I'm curious to know when, you know, what they got for their money. So that to me was what jumped out at me a little bit. It was a little vague, but a little bit on the we can do it positive side. So it's a good thing to encourage people, because it is nice to know that, hey, people find a way to own their own space in Brooklyn, even though that we're going to hear soon how that's still climbing.
Yes, you know, you are right. The article is a little light on details. I mean, what does your $190,000 buy? Is it a move-in place with great views and a lot of sun, and the floors are done, and new kitchens and bathrooms? And, of course, there are still some, you know, distressed properties that you could probably get relatively inexpensively, but once again, they are a little distressed. But, you know, I do, before we move on to the next article, I do want to point out that I am seeing a lot of clients whose parents are actually now jumping in on the mortgage process with them and co-signing, you know, loans. So there is certainly a trend. I guess if the child is going to be able to make the payments and has no other debt issues, either current or looking in the future, you know, I think parents now are signing on to their kids' loans, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a long-term investment for them too, and to make sure that, you know, I guess as they age along with their kids, that, you know, there's something at the end there that could appreciate, and maybe you know, rather than give them one lump sum and try and help them out and say, here's the entire purchase, you know, maybe if I can do a little chunk of it, at least you know that, especially now with the amounts we're talking about, that it's become very hard to give even assistance where you could put down even the 20%. Now it's a fraction of the 20%. So it does seem like a smart move, and you know, money well spent, especially in Brooklyn, where you can see a tangible return on that investment. The next story comes from the Brooklyn Reporter, and a lot of things we talk about, we're all over the map in Brooklyn, but I don't know if we've really touched on this section. It's another business district on 18th Avenue, down in the sick, I believe it's 67th Street, and in that neck of the woods. I guess it's Diker Heights. Would it be considered Diker Heights, or kind of?
I think more Bensonhurst up in
Bensonhurst,
that area.
And it's a record sale for a multi-use property, $6.7 million, for a property which houses right now about three or four different businesses, including a bank. So I guess I don't know if it's going to be turned into anything else or used for anything else other than commercial use, if it's just strictly an investment for commercial use. But again, It's a record number, so there's that kind of the attention grabber from the headline, because there's a lot of those headlines that we see when we're looking at these stories month in and month out, that new high, new record. So it's tough to really sift through those, but you know that's what we're seeing month in and month out. The other interesting thing about it is the who's doing the buying. And that neighborhood, it's in the past 20-25 years, it's shifted from heavily, heavily Italian to Asian. So, and it's Chinese buyers, again, a group buying that property and now in a heavily dominated Asian business district.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that the article points out that Bensonhurst, according to the city records, has the largest population of Chinese immigrants, beating out Sunset Park, Flushing, which is hard to believe, and Manhattan, which is also kind of hard to believe because in Manhattan they have Chinatown, which is solidly Asian, Flushing, solidly Asian. Sunset Park, still a mixture of you know, some newcomers and some Asians and some Mexican and some Hispanic. Yes, Bensonhurst, as you point out, heavily Italian, Italian social clubs, Italian restaurants, Italian pastry stores. Really, the light switch flipped, and it is now predominantly, you know, Asian. So it is, but you know, and the purchase price, 6.7. I don't know. Maybe that's cheap. They're not going to do anything with it for a couple of years because they still have store leases, unless they buy the store leases out, which could be which might happen. But you know, the people who bought it, an Asian conglomerate that does mixed use, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a little retail, a little hotel, a little office, and residential, and maybe something crazy like that building that I went up to Sheepshead Bay, that 50-story building that popped up in the middle of nowhere. But this probably, you know, these are all what they call taxpayer-type buildings, meaning it's a one-story building, and really all they do is pay taxes to the, you know, the city of New York. But, yeah, and one, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be a skyscraper of steel and metal, and steel, metal, and glass, I'm sorry. And, you know, we'll say, wow, wasn't the Apple Bank there at one point? Or
and a liquor store. Well, our next piece comes from, it's not necessarily a media outlet so much as it is a Q&A, multihousingnews.com. I just found it interesting because of the topic, and it's kind of a brief little interview with Alexandra Stepanovic, who is a co-founder of Ideal Properties Group, and she's being asked about investing in Brooklyn. And this is, it's kind of heavy on the, I guess, the industry jargon. There's a lot of, you know, like textbook answers here, but it does get into more mixed use type of properties and even rental buildings. So people, if you're going to invest in a building with units to rent out, and that's it's just one of the different diverse types of property. We talk a lot about the residential, either a home or a co-op or a condo, and then you have the commercial, like we just talked about on 18th Avenue, and then you have this type of property, a building, you know, where someone might come in and want to buy it as an investment just to rent out X, however many units are in the building. So there's a lot of different ways for property to be disseminated in Brooklyn, and this was kind of interesting in the way she kind of analyzed the data and talks about, you know, the different factors that are going into play with rental buildings.
Yeah, I mean, if you were a serious investor, this is a good article for to read and get some tips. I think for the casual real estate story browser, like we are, and maybe some of our listeners are, this is a bit of a heady article. But the points that are made is that there's a weakening in the rental apartment landscape, and landlords are having to make concessions in rent, and units are staying open on the market longer, and landlords are seeing rents plateau or decelerate, and so there is a little softening in the real estate market. And the one interesting point she makes is her statement that she says monthly mortgage bills in Brooklyn far exceed rents. So I guess that's an incentive for a person who wants a luxury apartment faced with buying a $1.5 million condo or maybe paying $3,000 or $4,000 a month for a rental. That certainly, makes it a difficult choice for someone who wanted to buy something is now faced with, mortgage payments that exceed rental, and maybe it just is easier to pay $3,000 or $4,000 a month, and until the market shakes out or the investor decides what they want to do.
Yeah, and we do run the gamut of who is listening in and who the audience is, and what the information that they may want to know, where we're talking about the 20-something who's trying to save his the change that he finds in the couch for his first home, to the investment mogul who's talking about speaking to investors, and covering a lot of topics that we talk about. Like, for example, we've touched on the new developments in the area. We've got a couple of new developments going up in Bay Ridge now. We're talking about the transit, the MTA issues, like in the subway line that's being taken offline, that's going to affect the neighborhoods. And a lot of the things that we talk about are things that do impact even the bigger fish who are looking at these properties as big time purchases for investments, and it's amazing to think that all that can be found. We have all those different types of properties in this small little borough.
There are a lot of options in Brooklyn, that's for sure.
Our next article, New York Times, Brooklyn prices reach new level. This is, I think we're going to have, this story will be the, every recap, we're going to have at least one story that addresses this topic yet again. This one's a pretty good one because it gives you a couple of different factors and numbers on what they're talking about. Again, we've heard it, the prices are plateauing and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't seem to be the case, especially when you look at the hard numbers, where quarter two of 2016 or second quarter of 2017, the sale number of places sold was up 51%. The median price is up 18%, or the average sales price is up 22%. I'm sorry, the median sale price is up 21%. And the one thing that's going down is the inventory. So the inventory, we don't have enough inventory to meet the demand, and all the other things that's contributing to all the other numbers going up.
So I guess this is economics 101, supply and demand. Supply goes down, or demand supply goes down, demand goes up, and the prices go up. And so, yeah, I mean, these are pretty incredible numbers, though. 51%, you know, increase in Brooklyn sales, and inventory dropping 16%. And, of course, this is yet another article. I think we do this every week, every month almost, you know. Brooklyn hits a new crazy high, and they always give a very, you know, unbelievable number. Brooklyn 51%, Manhattan only 15%. Yeah.
And considering that the inventory went down and the number of sales jumped up so much, and the prices, that's a big increase in price in just a year. It's almost as if you kind of have to bake that into any forecast and say, well, that's going to be the that's going to be our low end of our expectation. But again, these numbers are coming at us every month. We're reflecting back on either the previous quarter or the previous year or last week. The numbers were this, and now they've skyrocketed since last week.
Jason, I think you just take the same article and put it in our rotation each month and see if I remember that we did it the month before.
We're just going to change the percent. We'll just say, well, do you remember what the percent increase was last year?
Yeah.
As we come to the end of the show, we're going to this isn't actually a funny story. DNAinfo.com. It's because we've had all kinds of different selling points for properties. We even had the selling point of the, I believe not too long ago, were the Jewish mafia tie-in to it. Was this building was once famous for being something related to the Jewish underworld. Yeah. And this new thing, though, is pretty. I mean, when you reach this point, I guess your status is off the charts. When they're talking about luxury apartments and luxury homes, units, the space is so limited, and you think, you know, well, what do I get? What kind of square footage am I getting for all this money? So the new trend is to, in your kids' rooms, to put a teepee. And if there's a teepee in the room, it's supposed to show how big and how much space you have to play with, that you could reenact Custer's Last Stand, I guess, in your kid's bedroom.
Yeah,
and it's working.
Well, I do have to say that teepees, tents, even old refrigerator boxes are things that kids love to crawl in and get cozy. And it's sort of like, you know, no different than a cage for a puppy. They like to have their own space. And teepees are something that it's like a comfort toy for, you know, for children. Although this one looks like they have a fake campfire outside their teepee.
Yeah.
That may be going a bit too far. But I guess psychologically, if you could fit a teepee, although these are not tremendous teepees, but if you could fit a teepee in there with still enough room to walk around and the kids to play in, you know, when you're looking at a child's bedroom, you know, you have to say to yourself, right, I have arrived. This is a big apartment or a big house or something that, you know, my kids' rooms are self-contained playrooms now. But it is interesting that teepees are the thing. I said, if you get up to a slightly lower demographic, it might be called a tent or something like that, one of those pop-up tents that we have. And
or
I don't
sheet.
Think you necessarily need a teepee. Yes, sheets many times work also, but anything that highlights the fact that you got a big room and your kids can be self-contained in there, I think works psychologically to everybody's benefit.
They do also point out that it also ends an era of back to nature. So you're supposed to have, in this ultra-modern layout and design and the you know, the area and the apartment looks anything but like you're in nature. I guess this teepee that looks like it probably came from Urban Outfitters or an ultra trendy designer is supposed to give you the air of the outdoors, even though they are quite hipster inspired, and every room seems to be designed around the teepee, or the teepee fits the room incredibly well. But interesting that this is the new thing, and that if you do want to sell, maybe you should throw it. But then again, on the flip side, if you have a small space and you put a teepee in there, it's going to look ridiculously small.
I had a comment to make, which went out of my mind, unfortunately. Happens every now and then. But, you know, these teepees in these houses that are selling for $11 million or $4 million, such a minimal thing that people are putting in to make their place seem so. You would think they'd want a, you know, like a Wolf stove and refrigerator, one of those fancy stainless refrigerators and granite countertops, but these people are saying, you know, teepees are doing it. And the thought that did went out of my mind just came back. You know, parents probably love this because it's tick-free, it's bug-free, it's dirt-free. You know, the kid goes in, the kid feels like they're playing outdoors without ever having to go outdoors and getting a bug or a bug bite or a scrape. You know, they brought the outdoors indoors, and I guess that's the whole point, or one of the many points of the of this article.
Yes, and as we come to the end of the episode, we will end with that. And although I do tend to think back to the guest who had on and talked about luxury apartments in Brooklyn and the different amenities that people are now looking for, I remember him mentioning one of the trends was a live-in cook. So I don't know if you're paying this much for an apartment. I don't know if I'd be, you know, looking for the where you could fit the teepee, but where is my live-in cook going to reside?
Yes, absolutely. We don't have those issues.
Well, that's the end of our show. And, Bob, why don't you take us out?
Well, again, this concludes our radio program. Thank you, Jason, for finding all sorts of interesting articles. And I think maybe one theme here was, you know, we started with a story about parents helping their children buy a place, giving them money, helping them pay the mortgage, and ending with a story of parents providing an outdoor-indoor space, you know, for their little ones as they're growing up in their $11 million townhouse. So that's the and sandwiched in between that typical article we always have, how housing prices and sales have just broken all sorts of records, you know, for the month of August 2017. So once again, thank you for your research and sharing that with us. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people, wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge.